Welcome to English as a Second Language podcast, English Cafe, episode 66. This is English as a Second Language podcast, English Cafe, episode 66. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, wishing you a very happy new year on this first week of the new year, 2007. Because it's a new year, we have some new things for you here on the English Cafe. We thought we would do some experiments and try some new things. We've received lots of suggestions, and one of those suggestions is to try to get other voices on the podcast to listen to. And today we're going to do a little bit of that. If you have a suggestion or a comment, you can email those to us at ESLPOD@ESLPOD.com. As always, you can download a learning guide for this podcast on our website. Just go to ESLPOD.com. Our topic today is going to be about college and college experiences in the United States. And as usual, we'll also answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. Our first segment, our first part today, is going to be something that I'm going to call Ask an American, where we interview or talk to someone and try to answer questions that you might have of an average or typical American. If there is such a thing as an average person in a country, this is a good way for you to get to hear other voices. It's also a way for you to ask questions, not just about language, but other things that you want to hear about. And that's what we're going to do today. One of the ways that we're going to do this is that I'm going to ask other people who have podcasts, different types of podcasts, some of these general questions. Our first American that we're going to ask a question of is Rob, who is the host of a podcast about podcasting. He interviews other podcasts. He's also interviewed me on his podcast. If you go to our website and look under the What's New section, you can find the information to listen to his interview about me and ESL Podcast. So I thought it would be nice to interview Rob and ask him a question. The question that I asked Rob to answer is one that many people have suggested that I talk about on the podcast. And the question is, tell me about your university experience, your college experience. What are some things you liked and what are some things that you didn't like? Rob is going to tell us about his college experience. He's going to speak a little faster than I do normally, but don't worry about that. We're going to listen to it once. And then I'm going to go back and explain some of the things he talks about. He's going to talk about where he went to school. He's going to talk about what kind of school it was, who ran the school, who was in charge of the school. He's going to talk about what some of the famous things are of his university. And he's going to talk about some things he didn't like about his college experience. It is about a 3.5-4 minute answer. So we'll listen, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about it. Here's Rob.
Hello, this is Rob, host of the Podcast 411 podcast and co-author of the book Tricks of the Podcasting Masters. For my undergraduate degree, I went to the University of Dayton, which is in Dayton, Ohio. University of Dayton, while the name might not sound like it, is actually a Catholic university. And unlike most Catholic universities, it is not a Jesuit school. It is actually a Marinist school. Although I can't really remember what the difference is between a Marinist school and a Jesuit school. Other than to say Dayton is one of three or four major Marinist universities, compared to the hundreds of major Jesuit schools. What I really loved about the University of Dayton was the size of the school and the class size. There's about 6,900 undergraduate students, which is roughly about the same size as the University of Notre Dame, which meant the university was large enough that you didn't know everybody that went there, but small enough that you did know your professors. At UD, which is what we call the University of Dayton, the average class size was roughly 15 to 18 students. As a matter of fact, the largest class anywhere on campus was 100 students. The vast majority of classes were 15 to 18 students, and I had a couple of engineering classes that were actually only 3 or 4 students. So you really got to know the professors. We would often have parties in the ghetto, which is the off-campus area at the University of Dayton, and many of the professors would come down into the ghetto and party with the students. It was a very social environment. The real passion, however, at the University of Dayton is college basketball. The University of Dayton has one of the best college basketball arenas in the nation. One of the other things the University of Dayton is known for is the large amount of government grants it gets for research and development. The University of Dayton is located close to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which is the largest Air Force base in the United States, and the Air Force base where they do all their research. It is hard for me to think of anything I really did not like while at the University of Dayton. However, if I was to pick one thing, it would most definitely be the student loans I acquired while at the University of Dayton and had to pay back after graduating from UD. This is Rob from Podcast 411. You can go to podcast411.com to hear my show, where I interview other podcasters to find out what their shows are all about.
I hope you were able to understand most of what Rob was saying. He did use some vocabulary that I think it would be good for us to talk a little bit about. He tells us that he went to the University of Dayton in Dayton, Ohio, which is in the eastern part of the United States. He says that this is a Catholic university, a religious university that is run by the Roman Catholic Church. This particular university, he says, however, is somewhat special. He says,
and unlike most Catholic universities, it is not a Jesuit school. It is actually a Marinist school.
In the United States, as in other countries, there are many religious universities. Most of these, or many of these, are run by, operated by one part of the church, what we call the Jesuit, J-E-S-U-I-T, order, which is a group within the Catholic Church. Rob says that his school was not a Jesuit school. It was run by a different group called the Marinist. He also says he doesn't know the difference, but he knows who owned the university. Rob says one of the things he liked about his university was the class size. The number of students was not too big in each class, and the university was not too big. He says,
there's about 6,900 undergraduate students, which is roughly about the same size as the University of Notre Dame.
So there are 6,900 students, which Rob says is roughly the size of the University of Notre Dame. Roughly, R-O-U-G-H-L-Y, when we talk about numbers, means approximately, about the same. The University of Notre Dame is another famous Catholic university in the United States, most famous for its football team, its American football team. Rob says he liked the small classes. He talks about the class size. And then he says,
as a matter of fact, the largest class anywhere on campus was 100 students.
The expression as a matter, M-A-T-T-E-R, of fact, is just another way of saying, in fact, or here's another reason why this is true. You might say, for example, Ohio is cold during the winter. As a matter of fact, it snows there. I'm giving you more evidence about how cold it is in the winter. Rob then says,
the vast majority of classes were 15 to 18 students.
The expression vast, V-A-S-T, majority, means mostly, most of the classes. A majority is more than 50%. A vast majority would be 70, 80, 90%. Rob then talks about an area near the university where there were a lot of restaurants and bars that the students and the professors would go to socialize, to talk to each other, to have fun. He uses the verb to party. He calls this area the ghetto. Normally, a ghetto, G-H-E-T-T-O, is a poor part or a poor area of town. But I guess in Dayton, Ohio, this is the word they use for the area near the university where there are lots of restaurants. Rob then talks about what is most popular at the University of Dayton.
The real passion, however, at the University of Dayton is college basketball. The University of Dayton has one of the best college basketball arenas in the nation.
So the passion or the excitement, the interest at the University of Dayton is in college basketball. He says that the university has one of the largest arenas. An arena, A-R-E-N-A, is a big stadium, a big place usually to play some sort of sporting game. Rob then talks about another thing the university is famous for, and that is the money it gets from the government, what are sometimes called grants, G-R-A-N-T-S. A grant is when an organization gives you money to do something, usually to a university or another community organization. Rob then gives the reason why the university gets so much money from the government.
The University of Dayton is located close to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
The university is located, that's where it is, right next to an Air Force base. A base, B-A-S-E, is a word we use to describe a military area. The U.S. government spends a lot of money on military development, and some of that money goes to universities to do research for the government. Rob then tells us one of the things that he most disliked about his college experience.
It would most definitely be the student loans I acquired while at the University of Dayton and had to pay back after graduating from UD.
The universities are not free in the United States. Even the government universities cost money. Sometimes it can be very expensive, especially if you go to a private non-government university, like the University of Dayton, where Rob went. And in order to pay for your schooling, many students have to take out what are called student loans. These are special loans for college students. The interest rate, the amount you have to pay for the loan, is a little lower than normal, but you still have to pay them back. And Rob says that he acquired, meaning he ended up getting many loans, and he had to pay the government, or pay the bank, actually, back for his college education. You might want to go back now and listen again to what Rob said. I hope it'll make more sense. It'll be easier for you to understand. I'm very interested in what you think about our new experiment with talking to other people, our Ask an American experiment. Please email me your comments or suggestions, and we will try to continue to make it better. Now we're going to answer a few questions. Our first question comes from Thomas in Malaysia. Thomas wants to know the meaning of the expression all but, B-U-T. For example, in the sentence, it was all but certain that she would not marry him. The meaning here is the same as nearly. It was nearly certain. Means it's almost but not 100%. Another example, the assignment, the job that he had, seemed all but impossible. It wasn't impossible, but it was almost impossible. It was nearly impossible, very close to being impossible. Our next question comes from China. I'm going to have to spell the name Xudiaquan. And the question has to do with the word or the spelling of the word specialty. The question is, what's the difference between the spelling specialty and specialty? Well, first, let's define specialty. A specialty is something that someone is an expert in. A specialty can also be something you're just very good at. The restaurant's specialty is its lasagna. That's its best meal, its best dish. The difference between these two spellings is just U.S. versus British English. In British English, there's an I after the L, and in American English, there's no I. So American English is specialty, and in British English, it's ity. But the meaning is the same. The next question comes from Dmitry, and Dmitry is in the Ukraine, Dmitry. Dmitry says that he wants to know the meaning of the expression, don't be a square. A square is a geometric shape, like a triangle, a circle, a square, has four sides on it. We would say it has four right angles. That's what we call a 90-degree angle. But this is a slang word, a slang use of this word. It means someone who is not very fun, someone who is boring, someone who is old-fashioned, who doesn't like to try new things. This would be a square. The expression then, don't be a square, means don't be like that. The next question comes from Jaroslav, J-A-R-O-S-L-A-V, in the country of Slovakia. Jaroslav's question is about the word moonshine, M-O-O-N-S-H-I-N-E, one word. There are actually two words inside of the word moonshine. There's moon, which is up in the sky. I think it's made of cheese. That's what they told me when I was a child. The moon, the earth and the moon. The moon goes around the earth. The other word is shine, S-H-I-N-E, and to shine is when something is bright. So moonshine could be the light of the moon, but that's not the normal meaning. In American English, the normal meaning of moonshine is an illegal alcohol. When someone makes alcohol, like gin or beer or any other kind of alcoholic drink, and they do not have the permission of the government. Now, the term actually has a couple of different associations. It's not a word you'll hear a lot in talking about today, but it is a word you will hear when people are talking about the 1920s in the United States. During most of the, or all of the 1920s, beginning in the year 1920 and ending in 1933, the United States had a national or federal law against selling alcohol. This was commonly called prohibition, P-R-O-H-I-B-I-T-I-O-N. You should recognize or may recognize the word to prohibit, P-R-O-H-I-B-I-T, inside of this word. To prohibit means to tell someone they can't do something, to not allow someone to do something. So the United States had this 13-year period of prohibition. People did not stop drinking, even though alcohol was illegal to sell. Instead, what people did is they made their own alcohol. And that's where the word moonshine comes from, at least in this context. Moonshine is the name of the alcohol, the illegal alcohol that you make. Probably because since it was illegal, people often made it at night or worked on it at night when no one could see them. The other association moonshine has in American culture is with the southern and particularly the Appalachia region of the United States. Appalachia, A-P-P-A-L-A-C-H-I-A, is a region in the United States, in the eastern part of the United States, where there are the Appalachian Mountains, the two major mountain areas in the United States, what we would call the mountain ranges, are the Appalachian Mountains in the east and what we call the Rocky Mountains in the west. In the Appalachian Mountains, there were a lot of people living in the hills up in the mountains and were somewhat isolated. And so there began this tradition of seeing the people who lived in this area as being somewhat backward, as being not very modern. Another term, mostly a negative term, to describe people who lived in the hills would be a hillbilly, H-I-L-L-B-I-L-L-Y. Not a common term anymore, but it does describe the people in a negative way that live in the mountains, and the idea is that they're very backward, especially in this Appalachian region of the United States. So moonshine also has a connection with that community, that culture. Though, of course, these are negative representations, not necessarily factually correct, but it is an association that most people would make with the word moonshine. Our next question comes from someone whose name I don't know, and I don't know where they're from, but I have their question. Sometimes people email me, but they don't give me their name or where they're from, and this is an example. So this is what we would call anonymous, A-N-O-N-Y-M-O-U-S, when you don't know the name of some author or someone who wrote something, you would say it's anonymous. So this is a question from Anonymous, and the question is, what does the expression to cut, C-U-T, someone off mean? If you say, I was cut off on the freeway today. To cut someone off means to interrupt them if they're talking, or if you're in a car, to go into their lane, go into their space in front of them, making them slow down. It, of course, is dangerous to do that when you are driving, though here in Los Angeles, people are often very angry when they're on the freeway because it's so crowded, and so you will get people who cut you off. That's part of living in Los Angeles, I'm afraid. That's all we have time for on today's cafe. Remember, if you have a question, you can email us at eslpod@eslpod.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan. This podcast is copyright 2006 by the Center for Educational Development.